Okay, well, it's that time again, friends and neighbors, and of course, we all recognize that last riff, I hope, which is sort of the opening riff to what many people consider to be the original band that defined the genre and term heavy metal. I apologize for the somewhat poor recording quality. I'm using a platform that isn't very sensitive to certain dynamics, and so it tends to add a lot of phase and flange where it doesn't belong. I'm going to try to work on that in coming weeks. And the reason I chose that particular passage was because we're going to be talking today, of course, if you've read the introductory to the podcast, we're going to be talking about healthy versus unhealthy spirituality. And I'm going to focus a lot on characteristics of so-called unhealthy, negative, addictive, and or abusive religious practices and or spiritual practices. And I'm also going to be differentiating between the two of those. This is going to be a recapitulation somewhat of a workshop I did about 10 years ago with a colleague of mine who is, since that time, who was a graduate student at the time and is now a licensed professional, Dr. Kathy Rollins, and I'd like to acknowledge her in this podcast because some of the stuff she, part of her workshop presentation, I'm going to be quoting, and so I wanted to give kudos to her, and she was a really integral part of that presentation on the Together Again workshop that we did in back in the mid-90s. So, first of all, let me start off by saying, this is going to go counter to a lot of folks' ideas because, you know, we have all these great phrases in our linguistics about being on fire for Jesus and, you know, all these so-called positive affirmations we use and phrases we use to talk about basically being very excited about and filled with the Spirit of, you know, Jesus, God, whatever. And certainly I'm not, you know, poo-pooing in any way, shape, or form folks for whom any religious or spiritual orientation is a positive influence in their lives. What I am poo-pooing is people who use it in an unhealthy manner or who use it in an addictive, compulsive manner as an escape avoidance tool for looking at life's complexities, which is unfortunately too often the case. I often hear from folks, whether they're, you know, former wards of the state in our prison system, or whether they're, you know, as Dr. Alejandro Barchesi, University of Rome, would say of a lot of the so-called 12-step AA people, they trade one addiction for another, in his Bela Lugosi-esque manner, and he was right. And so I hear this a lot from these what I call religious freaks, which is not an appetitive term in my vocabulary, who have traded the addiction of drugs and alcohol to the addiction of 12 steps, God, whatever, and they use that like a club to beat other people over the head with as an excuse for them to escape and avoid their responsibilities to their family and other stuff. So we're not talking about that stuff because that's not healthy, okay? We're not talking about people who go and, you know, use the Bible to condemn other folks or the, you know, Quran or Torah or whatever to condemn or persecute people. Folks who do that are clearly using a spiritual or religious orientation in a wrong manner. And I can say that both as a psychology person, mental health person, and as an ordained minister, because many of you may or may not know, I'm also an ordained minister. So I'm not just talking out of my wazoo here, okay? Personally, I have a very personal and deep spiritual orientation, but not necessarily a religious one, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. I'm also not poo-pooing people who are agnostic or atheistic. If that works for folks, that's great. For the most part, you don't see those guys and gals running around beating people over the head with Darwin books, right, or Origin of Species, or, you know, talking about any of that stuff. So, kudos to them for not beating the rest of us over the head with their stuff. Occasionally you'll get a book like God Is Not Great. Many of you may or may not be aware of that. It's a very, very well-written book, by the way. Basically an atheistic book, and I don't agree with a lot of the tenets of it, but it's extremely well-written, and I do respect the individual a lot, and most of the reason he goes around defending his books is because the other folks are going around trying to beat him over the head with their religion, which I think is really, really, really shameful. So, for those of you who have a very strong religious faith or spiritual orientation and who keep it to yourself and or who share it appropriately with other people, that's great. More power to you. So let's start out with some basic definitions, okay? First of all, as you may have guessed, there's a huge difference between religiosity and spirituality. So I'm going to go ahead and define those for folks in case they don't know. So a person who is very religious or has a high degree of religiosity, right, is a person who adheres to a culturally sanctioned, organized set or system of group shared and man and woman made principles, thoughts, or actions concerning a higher power or force or forces that focus on one or more teachers or prophets of that group shared principle orientation that offers persons some frame of reference or orientation and usually some type of object or objects, person or persons, that center along for their primary foci of devotion. Okay. So it's a group of people coming together who share a same belief system, basically, an agreed upon belief system, right? And even as I say that, of course, many of you know that even as, you know, folks who are, you know, self-identified as Christians, there are many denominations or sects or offshoots, and they don't always agree on stuff. So, you know, I'm very much of the opinion of Ted Nugent, you know, who talks about religions as being a great way to start wars and beat other people over the head. And if it's used in that manner, it's certainly used inappropriately and certainly would be considered to be an addictive or abusive type of force, which is a negative force. Now, religiosity or religions differ dramatically from spirituality of persons who have a high degree of spirituality or spiritual faith or folks will hear me call it existential orientation. That's the same thing. A lot of times I'll use the word existentiality or existential orientation and spirituality interchangeably. And the reason I do that is to get away from any sort of religious overtone, so to speak, because a lot of folks don't know the difference. So I'll talk about existential issues when I mean, you know, what other folks might call spiritual issues. I do not, however, mean religious issues. Big, big, big difference, okay? So spirituality, how it differs from religiosity, is that spirituality is seen as an ongoing sort of process. It's an unfolding, a process of becoming. And it's a process whereby an individual becomes more self-actualized, becomes more self-aware, becomes more self-enhanced and self-efficacious. You folks have heard me use that word before. Through a systematic belief in and relationship with some sort of metaphysical power or force or forces or entity or entities greater than himself or herself. And that person may share his or her beliefs with other folks or may be a solitary practitioner, right? So people can be individually spiritual or individually existential, if you will, or they can share their existential orientation with other people who have similar views. If it's done in an organized way, then it becomes a religion, okay? So that's sort of the cutting-edge difference. Now, many of you may be saying, well, wait a minute, what's the difference in that and a cult? Well, Folks who've heard me rant on this before will no doubt roll their eyes and go, oh my God, is he at it again? Yes, I am, because there's groups of people who haven't heard my previous rant. So let me rant for a second on this one, please, if you will. And those who've heard this, just, you know, go get a cup of tea or use the bathroom or something, and you'll be okay by the time you get back. And you'll feel better, too. Basically, a cult is any form of religious or spiritual set of beliefs or religious organization that isn't culturally sanctioned, isn't in the majority. Okay, so religions differ from cults only in the fact that religions are, you know, some recognized nationally or by a majority culture, right? And for those of you who go, well, you know, aren't those Wiccans and pagans and all that kind of stuff? Well, yeah, technically speaking, they would be a quote-unquote cult, but I really advise folks not to use that term at all and get that out of your vocabulary, because really that's sort of like using a racial slur to describe a group of ethnic or racial groups that you don't like, and you're going to call them some nasty name. And that's really what cult is, right? And for those of you who go, well, he's just being semantic and being politically correct, no, I'm not. And those of you who know me know damn well I'm never politically correct, because my definition of political correctness is a ploy used by people who don't have any integrity, balls, guts, intestinal fortitude, honor, forthrightness, honesty, or whatever you want to call it, to speak the truth as they see it, right? And so I'm almost never politically correct and have no use for people who are and no respect for people who are. So when I say don't use the term cult, that isn't being politically correct or socially sensitive. That's being pragmatic, okay? And for those of you who are rolling your eyes going, oh my God, no, I'm sorry. And for those of you Christians in particular who may or may not remember their history, and if you don't, shame on you. What was Christianity considered back in Roman times? That's right, boys and girls. It was called a cult, right? Because it was not the socially and universally sanctioned spiritual orientation of the day, right? So, least we forget, Christianity at one time was classified as a cult, okay? So don't go calling pagans or Wiccans cults. I'm sorry, that's really inappropriate. It's certainly an alternative spiritual orientation, alternative only meaning it's not in the mainstream of Judeo-Christian realm, at least in America. So please let's remember that. And if you don't think that's an important distinction, go into a courtroom and watch you know, a husband trying to get custody of his children from his estranged wife, and claiming that the reason she's an incompetent parent is because she's a member of some cult, right? And the minute that word comes out of that guy's mouth, all the jurors go, and you can see the look of horror in their face. And, you know, the cult that this guy is oftentimes referring to is Wiccanism or paganism or, you know, whatever. And I'm sorry, those aren't cults. And if those are practiced correctly, they are very harmless spiritual orientations. And, you know, we can get into that on another podcast. This is not about alternative spiritualities, but in general about spirituality versus religion and about positive versus negative spirituality, okay? So let's go to that now and talk about the difference in a healthy positive or an unhealthy negative spirituality. This also, of course, is true for religions, but I'm going to be focusing mostly on spirituality on this podcast, because I really don't have a lot of use for organized religions as a whole. And no offense to folks who do, and if you do and that works for you, more power to you. I'm not slamming you. It just doesn't work for me. But spirituality definitely works for me. All right, so let's define positive or healthy spirituality. It's any system or practice of belief, organized or not, which means it could be a religion or not, in some sort of metaphysical power, force, entity, or entities or forces greater than one's own self, and it's to the level that significantly enhances one's life and life goal attainment, while at the same time does not interfere with, condemn, limit, pejoratize, detract, or in any way, shape, or form slam or harm other significant areas of one's individual functioning, which means work, social aspects, family life, you know, school, whatever, or tromp on somebody else's life, belief, goals, functioning, whatever. Okay. So to summarize that in a quicker manner, a healthy spirituality is one's own relationship with one's sense of higher power, self, object, whatever, in such a way that it doesn't become compulsive or addictive, that it enhances your life, makes life easier, makes life coping with difficult aspects of one's own existence better, and at the same time does not interfere with significantly another life area of one's own life, nor does it slam, put down, denigrate, or pejoratize or marginalize another person for his or her belief system or lack thereof, right? So that means a healthy spirituality does not slam an atheist or an agnostic, okay? So let's get this very clear here, folks. This is very, 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 very important. Cannot overemphasize this enough, right? So if that's the case, of course, what is an unhealthy spirituality? Well, an unhealthy spirituality is just the opposite, right? It's one that any system or practice of belief, so it could be a spiritual or religious orientation, in some physical, metaphysical, power, force, paranormal entity, whatever. I'm going to use the term metaphysical and paranormal as the same thing, although they're a little different. We're just accept that just for the sloppiness of this podcast, shall we say, we'll just use those interchangeably. Or entity or person or persons greater than oneself, that while in doing that, either is done so compulsively or limits one's life goals or limits one's life functioning or interferes with, condemns, limits, hinders, or detracts from somebody else's functioning, beliefs, goals, whatever. Okay. So, you know, some of you out there, if that's a little too complicated, let's just put it this way. Unhealthy spirituality systems or unhealthy religious belief systems are those which become basically an alternative form of addiction, another form of addiction, compulsion, that takes over one's life, that limits, and thereby doing so limits your functioning and self-realization ultimately, and really is not a good thing, is a bad thing, or you use it in a way to beat other people over the head with, and so that they who differ from your belief systems are seen as bad or evil or paganistic, you know, and I don't mean that in the spiritual orientation way, or heretical, or you know, whatever, bad kind, or whatever. So, healthy spirituality is basically one in which a person keeps his or her spiritual or religious aspects to themselves, or uses it to enhance their lives and or the lives of other people. And in the past, you've heard me talk about this notion of self-enhanced selfishness, that I would say this is a form of self-enhanced selfishness. So if it enhances your life, and in doing so you enhance the life of others, it becomes a win-win situation. It's the coolest thing since sliced bread and margarine. Okay. I'm going to borrow now from the writings of several well-known authors in the field. So any of you who aren't familiar with these folks, I would highly recommend that you investigate their writings. These folks are really, really well known, either psychology folks or social psychology folks, or they are very famous so-called Christian authors who have talked about this issue of having a very healthy versus an unhealthy spiritual or religious orientation, and or when religious orientations or spiritual orientations become an addiction and therefore, by definition, unhealthy. So let me talk about some of the names in the field that you folks should be familiar with, and that's who I'm also borrowing a lot of these concepts, and in some cases, outright plagiarizing, but I am citing them, so it's not real plagiarism, but it's certainly mimicking out the wazoo. One is Gordon Allport, who many of you may have heard. Another one is Oates, and the other set of authors are Arterburn and Felton, A-R-T-E-R-B-U-R-N and Felton, F-E-L-T-O-N. And they are very well-known authors in the Christian field who write about healthy faith versus unhealthy faith. And in fact, I think the title of their book has something to do with that. And let me look at the reference for you folks. Yes, the Arterburn and Felton 1992 book oh, I'm sure they have a updated version by now, Faith That Hurts, Faith That Heals. Gordon Allport's wrote a text about this called The Individual and His Religion back in 1959. And Oates is a 78, The Religious Care of the Psychiatric Patient. While some of those are a little dated, they are just as relevant today as they were back then, in my personal opinion. The other folks, person you folks need to be aware of is Father Leo Booth, whose 1991 book, When God Becomes a Drug, Breaking the Chains of Religious Addiction and Abuse, is a really landmark book, and I highly recommend it to everyone to read. It is really, really, really awesome, awesome, awesome. So it's really, really a cool dilly, in my personal opinion. So those are folks you definitely need to become aware of, and if you don't know them, look them up and check out some of their writings. They're pretty amazing folks. So sort of borrowing extremely heavily from those writings, there are 20 aspects that these authors talk about that I've kind of put together in one document that characterize a healthy religious orientation or a healthy spirituality, right? So these apply to both. And they are the following. Number one, the individual who adheres to these acknowledges that life is complex and that things are not seen in simplistic black and white terms. Okay, and so most of you who know these religious freaks, and I use that in a very bad way, I know that it's, you know, they have these cutesy little terms and, you know, these black and white, very concrete reasoning kinds of things that they look at, and, you know, the authors all tell you that's pretty fubard. The system, number two, the religious or spiritual system provides a framework from which to view all of life. So all things are examined and woven together. They aren't segregated out or separated out. Okay? Point number three, the system produces a consistent morality. So it doesn't say, you know, love thy neighbor and then kill the person who doesn't believe in Jesus in the next line, okay? And again, I'm not slamming Christians, because real Christians don't really buy that stuff, in my personal opinion. Healthy Christians do not buy that stuff. I know. So I don't want anybody to hear this, by the way, is me slamming Jews or Christians or any traditional organization, because obviously all religious orientations have their foibles, and people will often take things written and proof text them, which is taking things out of context and twisting them to your own advantage, and folks that are notorious for doing that throughout history. So I'm not slamming folks who use these reliably. The individual grows and changes with new experiences and knowledge, so it's not a static system. It's not a, this is it, and it never changes and grows, right? Number five, there is balance. So there is a rhythm that exists in life in which duty and celebration coexist and ebb and flow like waves in the ocean. Number six, there is a sense of humor, playfulness, and music. And that's a direct quote, by the way. Which basically means it's not all seriousness and all about, you know, and, you know, all these uber, you know, solemn stuff. Number seven, it is focused on God, and I would say it's focused on God, or some, in the Judeo-Christian orientation, it's focused on God, and other orientations it's focused on nature, or the goddess, or the gods, or whatever your thing is, but it's focused on some supreme being, or beings, or entities, or force, or forces. Number eight, and this is, I think, really on target, the system is respectful of others. Right, so it doesn't slam other people's orientation if they disagree with you. Right? And it doesn't try to cram it down your throat, or it doesn't try to denigrate you or label you as evil or bad or satanic or whatever if you don't believe in it. Right. Number nine, there is a freedom to serve. And think about that. It's a heavy concept. Free to serve. Right. So you have a choice whether to follow the edicts or not, and you're free to follow them. And in doing following them, it also frees you up to live in a consistent situation where there's both humor and seriousness and playfulness and music and morality and duty, but celebration as well, right? Another very, very important point, right? Number 10, it encourages a sense of self-worth. Another very, very, very important point, right? And again, this is not a grand self-aggrandizement. This is not, you know, making yourself a legend in your own mind. This is not narcissism, right? That's the problem I have with a lot of these religious, so-called religious leaders. You know, they set themselves up as a, you know, legend in their own mind, and that's probably because they think they are delusional or otherwise. It encourages everyone in this system to have a sense of themselves and that they are worthy and important as individuals. And I think that is really, really important. You don't have that, you've got something that's very, very destructive. Number 11, the individual is allowed to be vulnerable, right? In other words, you're allowed to make mistakes, you're allowed to have feelings, right? Obviously, the higher your self-worth is, you know, generally speaking, the higher your sense of self-efficacy, and I've talked about this concept before, right, which gives you power, and if you're powerful, you can be vulnerable. It's not that big of a risk. You can make mistakes and admit mistakes and be open to different experiences, whether they're, you know, with Allah, God, Buddha, the prime mover, you know, nature, the goddess, or whatever. It also allows you to be open and have a communication with other folks and be vulnerable and be open to that sort of thing because you know you have a safety net, right? Your safety net is both your own sense of self as well as that of your higher being, power, entities, whatever, right? So it's a very, very warm and nurturing system. Doesn't mean it doesn't have rules and regulations, but it does mean that they are not set up to beat the crap out of somebody or somebody else. They're set to provide a structure, right? Number 12, there's an atmosphere of trust. Trust between people who are of like-minded, trust between people who are different, trust between you and your higher power, powers, whatever. Trust of yourself, right? A lot of people who know me often hear me refer to a thing I call the spark, right? Some folks have referred to that as the God within, or channeling God, or whatever you want to call it. And I talk about folks having this internal spark, or this internal flame, or this internal voice, and I don't mean because they didn't take their antipsychotic medication, okay? This is the sense that of God within, so to speak, channeling God. You know, you're sort of the vessel for this entity or entities and this thing living inside of you and working through you kind of thing. And again, I don't mean that in a delusional sort of sense, but you have to be able to have trust in this inner voice, if you will, trusting your gut, trusting your inner feelings, however you want to say that, right? That's number 12. Number 13, the system is individualized, okay? So it's a individual one-to-one kind of thing, which ties in with number 14, which is it is relationship oriented, right? So there's a relationship between you and your system. It's not a static. It's not a one-way situation. The relationship is open to both. It's a give and take from both situations, right? So you are getting beauty and strength and knowledge and wisdom and salvation or whatever from your spiritual or religious orientation, and you are in a sense being enlivened by that, and then you are sort of giving back and serving that system by helping others and feeling good and feeling the internal God within, or however you want to say that, the force within or the spark or whatever. And so again, it becomes a very, very win-win, what I call self-enhanced selfishness scenario, which is a really cool thing, right? It's about a relationship with you and this God and you and this entity or this system, and also you're sharing that relationship with other people in a healthy sort of way. It is personal. That's number 15, right? So it's not this amorphous, uncaring, you know, amoeboid blob energy thing, right? Because even if you see the prime mover, God, Allah, whatever, as this, you know, amoebic entity force, it's a personal relationship. It's not an uncaring, ungiving, you know, you can't have a relationship with a thing. You know, you can have a relationship with an entity or force, but the force has to care about you. The force has to have some sort of communication back and forth to you, right? Number 16, the individual is encouraged to be non-defensive, right? which goes back to this, you know, trust and relationship orientation, because you obviously can't trust something if you're constantly having to defend yourself and making excuses and feeling sorry for yourself or feeling like you're not worthy and, you know, and that you're this horribly sinful person, so to speak, and, you know, that you're afraid of God's punishment or, you know, doom and gloom from your, you know, entity or goddess or whatever, right? This isn't about condemnation. This is about love, right? This is about openness, and as I said, you know, as these 20 points talk about trust and, you know, positiveness, these are not about fear, right? Number 17, it is reality-based. Now, I know a lot of people are going, well, wait a minute, how can you prove this? Well, we're not talking about proving. What we're talking about in reality-based, and I think what these authors are talking about is that it looks at the reality constraints that we all have. We're all human, which means we all make mistakes. None of us are perfect, right? We can try to aspire to be the most perfect creatures we can be, but let's be honest, we're never going to be perfect, right? And if we believe in a supreme force of forces, maybe those force of forces are perfect, but we're not them, and we're never going to be them ultimately, which means we're never going to be perfect. You know, so the reality is we're going to make mistakes. Reality is we have to balance, right, this shell, this body, right, with a spirit entity inside. We have to, you know, as Jung would call it, the ghost in the machine, you know. We have to, you know, look at spiritual yearnings and longings, yearnings and longings and spiritual desires and needs versus our physical desires and needs and temptations. And we have to look at society, you know, and living in a society, unless we're, you know, sitting out in the outback somewhere in Australia, or we're, you know, living in the Adirondack Mountains, you know, in upstate New York, you know, or wherever, being l'ermite, right, being the hermit. We've got to deal with other people. We've got to deal with work and society and, you know, the temptation to quote-unquote sin, the temptation to do bad, I would say, to do things that are harmful. And when I say bad or sinful, I mean things that are not in our best interest, or I don't mean that in the Judeo-Christian sense, right? And I would argue that anything that, in regards to that, since I brought that up, anything that distances you from the true self, anything that makes muddy the waters, such as drugs or, you know, lying or deceit, even to yourself, even worse to yourself, I think, than to your fellow human, you know, is separating you from your inner true self, which is separating you from your relationship with yourself and or your God or goddess or entity. And to me, that's the real definition of sin. It separates you from the reality, the truth of this beautiful energy, light, force, ultimate truth, whatever, how you see this thing or things, you know, that separates you from them, because it makes you want to put masks on and make up excuses for your behavior because you feel like, oh my God, I can't be vulnerable. I have to be perfect. I'm going to be punished. Oh my God, right? That to me is sinful. And so my definition of sin is anything that separates you from the reality of the truth of the beauty of yourself and of this entity or entities that you worship, unless you're an agnostic, and then separates you from the beauty of nature or, you know, whatever. Okay. So it's reality-based. It you know, it takes the fact that we are living in this physical world, as George Harrison said in one of his you know, older recording titles to one of his recordings, "Living in the Material World," also the name of one of his songs, right? So, and that's what he's talking about. He's talking about the struggle between, you know, the spiritual and the physical, the corporeal and the esoteric, right? And there's always a struggle because we're, as I said, this ghost, as Jung would say, this ghost in the machine, right? We're having to deal with two different systems that are seemingly, you know, at odds, antithetical, and we have to somehow, you know, rectify the reality that we're living with a construct and a constraint. We're living with our own limited cognitive abilities to see God or goddess or whatever for what that thing really, or things or person or whatever really is. You know, so there's all kinds of reality constraints we have, but there's also a lot of freedoms that we have to make choices. So all these are aspects of reality-based spiritual orientation, right? Number 18, it allows persons to embrace their emotions. So this is not about being stoic or quote-unquote puritanical, right? And I say that with a little tongue-in-cheek. This is not about, you know, this is about fully feeling emotions and recognizing them, acknowledging them, processing them, and when you have a struggle with them, talking about the struggle you have with them and all this kind of stuff. This is not about being a robot, right? Which is tying in a lot to number 19, which is it encourages people to accept their humanity, right? They are not objects. They are not, you know, amorphous, materialistic, simply corporeal blood vessels. You know, they are much more than that. We're not just molecules. We're you know, a whole lot more than that. It's kind of like the old Gestalt psychology notion. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the famous phrase in Gestalt psychology, which I really, really like this phrase a lot. I'm certainly not a Gestalt psychology person per se, but they have some really good aspects of some of their, if you will, edicts or theorems or beliefs or however you want to call that. And one of their little positions is that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And that's essentially what this thing is saying, right? Because people aren't just an amalgamation of molecules, right? If you add all the molecules together, this is a person, right? Well, people are a whole lot more than that. And I tell a lot of my patients and students and friends and people I know, right, just as I'm sharing with you folks out there in podcast land, so to speak, right, I describe it this way. So if you had an alien coming to Earth, right, and the alien approaches you and says, hey, heard you guys had these things called desserts, and amongst the many desserts that I see you folks have, I hear this thing about a German chocolate pound cake, and it sounds really, is a pound cake really weigh a pound, and is it really, quote-unquote, heavy, and you know, how do you make one of these things? And, you know, and so you give the alien a piece of the German chocolate pound cake, and the alien goes, woohoo, this is cool. We love this. This is great. This is chocolate, huh? And what goes into this thing? How do you make one of these things, right? So you pull out the chocolate bars, right, the cocoa, or you pull out the flour, and you pull out the sugar, and you pull out the eggs and the milk and, you know, whatever else you want to use in there, you know, the pull out the Bundt cake pan, you know, or and you look at the oven and turn the oven up and you say, okay, if you take these little things they call eggs and flour and, you know, yeast or whatever, leaven or whatever, and this cocoa and, you know, this sugar and this butter and all these kind of things, and you lay them out and you say, if you add this, 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 it equals this cake, and you point to the cake that's now missing a piece because you gave it to the alien, right? So the alien's scratching, right, his head and looking at this stuff and goes, you mean if we put all this shit together, we're going to make this cake? I don't believe it. Right? So then you start mixing the stuff together, and you put it in the oven, and you cook it, and you bring it out, and you let it cool, and you take it out of the pan, and lo and behold, there you have another German chocolate pound cake, right? And it's hard for the alien to conceive that if you add these round things, white things that look like eggs, and you add this white substance, milk, and this, you know, flour, and this brown chocolate, black chocolate stuff, and sugar, and all this kind of stuff, you end up with this thing. Well, the cake is certainly a lot more than just eggs, milk, flour, sugar, cocoa, right? It's a whole lot more than that, and there was no way to predict how uber cool this German chocolate pound cake is going to taste if you just add eggs plus milk plus sugar plus cocoa plus flour plus heat plus milk. You know, there's no way you'd predict that, and I think people are exactly the same way. You can't predict people from just knowing their components, right? The other aspect I typically use is myself as an example, and I say to people, look, you know, if you see all that crap on the wall that I have, and I have a lot of stuff on the wall, right, a lot of degrees and stuff, right? So, or if you take all that away and you just say, okay, so this guy's a doctor, and you add doctor plus musician, because obviously I'm a musician. You guys and gals hear me play every time we start one of these things. Obviously, I'm not a technician, or I'd have a better audio transport way to get the guitar in so it wouldn't sound so distorted and weird and flangy, but that's another story. So we're not going to put electrician in there or electronics wizard in there with my descriptors, right? But so if you put in there, you know, guy with good IQ scores, right, and we won't talk about my horrible mechanical reasoning skills or my poor visual learning skills or my poor hand gross motor skills, which you've heard you folks have heard me say before, very gross, right? But that's part of me. So if you put gross motor skills, right, plus poor visual memory skills, plus great scholastic aptitude skills, right, plus great auditory processing and skills, plus musician, plus doctor, plus cook, because I love to cook, and frankly, I'm a really good cook, and most people would agree that I've had my food. It's not just me being delusional. Right. And, you know, I work out regularly. I exercise pretty much every other day. And, you know, I play racquetball and all this kind of, I'm a big health and wellness freak. So if you add all this stuff up, you add mail, right, and you add all these things together, equals me, right? And then people meet me and they're like, well, wait a minute, you're a lot more than just those degrees on the wall, or being a doctor, or being a male, or being a single male, or being, you know, a racquetball player, or a guy that works out, or a cook, or whatever. You're a lot more than that. And somehow, you know, or a guy with a sleep disorder, or whatever. So if you add all that stuff together, it means me, but the me is a lot different from just the additive parts. And that's what that gestalt thing means, that the whole is much greater than just adding the parts together. And part of us is being human. Part of us is being, you know, foible and fallible, right? Most of the time I'm pretty rational, but sometimes you'll hear me go off on these podcasts and I get pretty histrionic, right? The last one I did on the 12 steps is a great example of me getting on my soapbox and being all histrionic and all, you know, grumpy and, you know, stuff. So I can be pretty rational and calm. I'm pretty excitable. Right? Not as excitable as Warren Zevon's excitable boy, but I get pretty excitable. If anybody sees me on stage, I space out. I meditate on a regular basis. I'm a very spiritual guy, right? Music for me is a spiritual entity. It has nothing to do with, you know, money or chicks or sex or whatever. I mean, it doesn't. It doesn't mean any of that thing for me. It's a spiritual expression for me. That's another story. So I think you guys got my point, right? And you gals did too. And number 20, the system is loving, right? It's not accusatory. It's not blaming. It's not castigatory. It's not, you know, defiling or defaming or finger pointing. It's not a critical parent, as transactional analysis people might say. It's a loving system and encourages folks to be loving both of themselves and of their humans, fellow humans, and of their spiritual or religious objects or entities or higher power or whatever, right? So now you know the difference in a cult and a religion, which really is just a term. You know the difference in a spirituality and a religion, right? And you know characteristics of healthy and unhealthy faith. Now, what do you do if you're the victim of one of these unhealthy people who is on fire for, you know, Buddha or whatever and wants to beat you over the head with their religious, you know, fervor? Well, you run like hell. You tell them to shut the heck up and you draw really firm boundaries, right? Because that's an inappropriate boundary transgression. And if you see these people who are, you know, attending a jillion 12-step meetings or, you know, and I'm sorry, but that's an addiction. If you're attending three meetings a day, you're an addict. And particularly if you are neglecting other important aspects of your life. And the same thing with the religious addiction, right? Refer them to Father Leo Booth's book. They're not going to like it, but it's a great book. If you're curious about your own religiosity, right, there is a religious addiction scale, believe it or not, and it's by Arthur Burnin Felton, the folks I mentioned earlier. It's a great scale, and it's embedded inside their book, The Faith That Hurts, Faith That Heals. And you can go through that, and there's ways to score it to find out if you or somebody you know is a religious addict, right, or has a negative religiosity. And then if they want to do their work, right, Father Leo Booth also has a lot of good information in his book, When God Becomes a Drug, Breaking the Chains of Religious Addiction and Abuse. He also has what he calls a spiritual sobriety worksheet. Right, and it's really cool. And those two folks know more about this than I'll ever remember or forget. So I really encourage folks that if you think you are the victim of religious abuse or you've been religiously addicted yourself and you want to get clean and sober, praise Jesus, and you want to be in a good way on fire for God where you're not burning yourself up and everybody else around you, go get help, right? You can get therapy for this. You can moderate stuff, right? Balance is the key, right? You can't work all the time. You can't play all the time. This is a balance, right? And so those of you who are victims of abuse, if the abuse is bad enough, you know, you may end up having post-traumatic stress disorder. You may end up being depressed. You may end up being very self-dissatisfied or suicidal or anxious about yourself or whatever. If you have any of that stuff, get rid of that crap. You don't need it, right? Religion and spiritual orientations are things that are designed to enhance our lives and make our lives better and easier. They're like a blanket that we are to wrap ourselves in to feel good about ourselves and our fellow human beings. They're not something that we're to design in the shape of a battle axe or a club to beat the crap out of ourselves and or everybody else who disagrees with us, okay? So if you're the victim of that, go get yourself some help and get out of it. If you know somebody who's doing it to you, stop them, right? I know that's easier said than done in some cases, but if it requires you walking away, walk away. If it requires you, you know, having a cake to bake for an alien, go excuse yourself and bake a cake for an alien. Do something to get yourself out of that situation, right? Do something to ground yourself. If you're a kid and you can't get away from your religiously addicted parents, do something to distance yourself from that. And if nothing else, while they're raving and ranting and preaching and all this kind of crap, in your head, go to a place, dissociate in your head, go inside yourself and reach for yourself and know there is a true spirituality inside yourself that has nothing to do with this artificial crap that people are trying to beat you over the head with if they're being inappropriate about it, okay? Please do not equate religion and spirituality with the same thing, and do not equate all people who are of a particular religious faith with those who are religiously addicted and or abusive, because that's not the case. There are plenty of what I call rational Christians out there who I just love and think very, very highly of and have nothing but respect and admiration for. There are tons, and that's true of Taoist and Hindu folks and Jewish folks and all kinds of forms, Wiccans, pagans, all kinds of forms of folks. And, you know, one of my best friends is a self-professed atheist, and he's one of the most moral, ethical people I know. I love him as a human and just think he's awesome. So you don't have to have a spiritual or religious orientation to be a good person, in my personal opinion. Just an opinion. Folks are certainly free to disagree with that. But it's been a boon in my life, and I use it with my music. That's how I channel it. That's how I get into it, and my meditation is a form of that. Working out is trying to clear my mind out so I can get closer to me and be the better person that I want to be, right? So please don't equate crazy religious people and crazy spiritual people with any one or two religious orientations or spiritual orientations, and don't think that everybody's like that, because they're really not, right? There are some sane, rational folks out there, believe it or not, and I really encourage all of you to find something that works for you, whatever it is, and adhere to it and keep to it yourself, and if you find other people that you can share it with, great, and if not, be a solitary practitioner, be the best damn solitary practitioner you can be, and use it in an appropriate, healthy way as it was intended to be used. Thanks a lot for listening. I'll have another podcast up in another week or so, and hopefully my online consultation/counseling long distance dillies will be up pretty soon. I'm waiting for the folks who are setting that up for me to tell me it's a go, because I'm pretty much an electronic moron, so they have to kind of handhold me and butt wipe me to get me to use this thing. So good luck. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. I really appreciate everybody's support and all the listeners out there, and I wish you all the best. Until later, have a good one.